when President Trump won Wisconsin in the 2016 general election, it was by about 23,000 votes. Political watchers were surprised at the outcome given Wisconsin's history as a blue state in presidential elections. A new study from the left-leaning super PAC claims that Wisconsin's voter photo ID law could have led to the suppression of 200,000 votes, mainly from voters who are African-American or Democratic voters, and that in turn could have had a major impact on the outcome of the election here in the state. Ari Berman joins us now to talk more about that study. He's a senior contributing writer for The Nation and author of the book Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Ari, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thank you for having me.
Well, what were some of the individual stories you heard from people who weren't able to vote here in Wisconsin?
Sure. So I was in Wisconsin on Election Day, and I was also there during the primaries as well. So I saw these stories up close, both in terms of my own reporting and then in terms of reading other stories and then in terms of reading court depositions and things like that. But one of the things that really struck me, and I wrote about this in the lead for my article about the study, was a story of a guy by the name of Eddie Lee Holloway Jr., who was a 58-year-old African-American man who moved from Illinois to Wisconsin, and when he went to get a voter ID in Milwaukee, he brought his Illinois photo ID, his birth certificate, and his Social Security card, but he couldn't get an ID for voting because the name on his birth certificate said Eddie Jr. Holloway instead of Eddie Lee Holloway Jr., and thus began this crazy Kafka-esque process for him to try to get a voter ID. He went down to Vital Records in Milwaukee, and he said, how much will it cost to amend my birth certificate? They told him between $400 and $600, which I don't think was accurate, but nonetheless, that's what they told him. They said he had to go back to Illinois and amend his birth certificate there. He went back to Illinois, was not able to do it there. The net effect was that this one voter made seven trips to two different states, spent over $200 of his own money, and still wasn't able to vote in Wisconsin. And there are, unfortunately, lots of these stories out there.
Those are stories kind of one at a time. Tell us about this study now looking at Wisconsin voter ID and voter turnout.
So what this study, which was done by Priorities USA, which is a Democratic group, so I say that in the piece that you have to first off to start with the caveat that this was done by a group that supports Democratic candidates. Their study found that Wisconsin's voter ID law could have suppressed up to 200,000 votes, because what they looked at is they found that in states that did not adopt strict voter ID laws in 2016, turnout increased by 1.3%. But in Wisconsin, turnout decreased by 3.3%. And they were saying that if voter ID was one of the reasons why this decrease happened, that meant that there was 200,000 fewer votes. And of those 200,000 fewer votes, those people that were more likely to be quote-unquote lost voters were more likely to be African-American, were more likely to be Democratic. And so they found that the voter ID law did have a suppressive effect. The voter ID laws nationally had a suppressive effect, and the biggest impact was in Wisconsin.
Now, people have certainly shared this study online. Democratic voters in particular, I think, see this 200,000 votes deterred. This could have made the difference. Some people are more skeptical, saying, well, there could be other things. You know, Wisconsin voters in the primaries weren't big fans of Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. They both lost the primary here. There might be something else about Wisconsin that accounts for this drop in voter turnout.
Sure, and I think that's absolutely reasonable. I think it's very difficult to say why people didn't turn out. I will say, though, that based on my own reporting, Wisconsin has had an especially large number of stories about people who couldn't vote because of the voter ID law. Not just my own reporting, but there was a very extensive Associated Press story that ran last week that detailed multiple stories of people who had problems voting. Wisconsin was taken to court multiple times, not just because of the voter ID law, but because the DMV was not issuing people IDs. So there were lots of issues there. And if you compare Wisconsin, for example, to Minnesota, it's interesting because those, as you know, very, very similar states, very competitive states on all fronts. And Minnesota did not experience the same kind of decreases in turnout that Wisconsin did, even though Wisconsin had not only a competitive presidential election, but a competitive Senate election, which Minnesota did not. And the study found that turnout was down in Wisconsin versus Minnesota, and also turnout in African-American counties, places like Milwaukee, dropped off at significant higher levels than in similar places in Minnesota. So I think the voter ID law at least contributed to the decrease in turnout in Wisconsin.
We're talking to Ari Berman from The Nation magazine, author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America, looking at the impact of voter ID laws on voter turnout, especially here in Wisconsin. Ari, how does our law here in Wisconsin when it comes to photo ID at the polling station, how does that compare to what other states have done?
One of the strictest in the country. First off, the federal courts found that 300,000 registered voters, which was 9% of the electorate, did not possess strict forms of ID when this law was passed. So that's a very large number. You're talking about 9% of the electorate in a state where elections are often very, very close. Now, obviously, some people were able to get these IDs, but we saw a lot of problems in Wisconsin, not just the fact that so many people didn't have the ID, but when I was there reporting in September of 2016, we received recordings from the DMV that showed that people were told that they had to pay to get a free ID, which was not true, that they had to present multiple underlying documents, which was not true. So Wisconsin was taken to court by groups like the ACLU a number of different times throughout this process. And then we had statements from people like Glenn Grothman, member of Congress, saying that the photo ID law was going to help Donald Trump win the election. And so that kind of rhetoric was fairly alarming as well. So Wisconsin had one of the strictest laws. I think it had some of the worst implementation of any state and some of the most provocative statements. And it's unfortunate because Wisconsin, as you know, has had a history of being very progressive on voting rights. So I think that's what made Wisconsin different from Texas. In Texas, you have consistently low voter turnout, lots of apathy. In Wisconsin, you have consistently high voter turnout, very engaged people when it comes to elections. So I think the voter ID law had a particular impact in a state like Wisconsin, which is not used to these kind of restrictions on voting.
Do you think that voter ID laws in Wisconsin and elsewhere were passed with the intent of driving down voter turnout in certain communities?
I do. I believe that's true because if you look at who didn't have forms of ID in Wisconsin, it was much more likely to be African-American and Latino voters. That's why the voter ID law was initially struck down before it was reinstated by a panel of Republican judges on the Court of Appeals. Other things that Wisconsin did, like cutting early voting, was invalidated. The judge in that case said that the restrictions on early voting disproportionately targeted African-American and Democratic-leaning voters in Milwaukee. So it wasn't just voter ID. There were other things that happened there. There were allegations, for example, State Senator Dale Schultz, who was a Republican, who's now retired, said that in meetings of Republican lawmakers, they talked about restricting voting rights for African-Americans, restricting voting rights for college students. This was a Republican member of the Senate who was making this claim. So I think there's a lot of evidence that this was done intentionally, and that, quite honestly, it worked.
The case for voter ID is that it's a fairly straightforward way to make sure I can't impersonate somebody else at the polling station. I can't fraudulently vote in someone else's name. Does it have some of that benefit?
Well, I think the problem is that type of fraud, voter impersonation fraud, is exceedingly rare. That Wisconsin didn't present a single case of voter impersonation in court that the law would have stopped. It's a very inefficient and dumb way to steal an election. If someone shows up and says they're Ari Berman, they're most likely to get caught. First off, most polling workers know the people voting at that place. Secondly, there's other less restrictive ways to confirm who somebody is. And thirdly, to commit voter fraud, you have to know where someone lives. You have to know that they haven't voted before. You have to know that they're not going to subsequently try to vote. Then doing all of those things, you're only casting one extra ballot, and you're risking a felony, you're risking 5 years in jail, and you're risking never being able to vote again. So I'm not saying that voter fraud never happens, but I think it's quite rare, and the threat of it has been exaggerated, I think, dramatically. And you look at the number of people who didn't have strict forms of ID, 300,000 according to the federal court. Look at the number of cases of voter impersonation in Wisconsin, which was zero according to federal court records, and it seems like many more people are being burdened than cases of voter impersonation that this might have stopped.
I want to step outside of Wisconsin for a moment and look at some news from the U.S. Supreme Court today. North Carolina, their laws, including voter ID laws, there had been court challenges. Those laws were overturned. Supreme Court decided not to take them up due to a fairly long and rambling legal narrative leading up to that. But what do you make of this decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to not take that up? That means those laws will still not be in effect in North Carolina?
Well, I think it's very significant because North Carolina passed one of the strictest, if not the strictest, restrictions on voting, and they did so just a month after the Supreme Court ruled in June of 2013 that states with the longest history of discrimination, which included North Carolina, no longer had to approve their voting changes with the federal government. So they didn't just require voter ID, they cut Election Day registration, they eliminated Election Day registration, which Wisconsin still has, they cut early voting, they eliminated out-of-precinct voting, they eliminated pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds. In July of 2016, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals found that that law targeted black voters, in the court's words, with almost surgical precision. And they said that some parts of the law were, in the court's words, as close to a smoking gun as you'll ever see in modern times. So that was remarkable language for a court of appeals in this day and age to use. And I think that if the Supreme Court had reinstated this law, number one, it would have made it a lot harder to vote in North Carolina, but number two, it would have had ripple effects all across the country, because I think people are looking at North Carolina, they're looking at Wisconsin, they're looking at Texas, and they're wondering which way the wind is going to blow. Is the Supreme Court going to uphold these laws or not? And that's going to have an impact on whether more states do these kind of things in the future.
We're talking to Ari Berman, senior contributing writer for The Nation, author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America, talking about new claims that more than 200,000 votes could have been suppressed in the 2016 election in Wisconsin because of the state's voter ID law. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Wisconsin's voter ID law is too restrictive, or do you think it's a good idea and necessary to prevent possible voter fraud? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin's voter ID law garnered a lot of controversy when it was implemented leading up to the 2016 presidential election. A new study claims that as many as 200,000 people could have had their votes suppressed as a result. You could join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think the new law had a big impact on the election, on its outcome? Do you think the state should continue with the voter ID requirement, or would you like to see it overturned or changed in some way? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Ari Berman stays with us, senior contributing writer for The Nation, author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. We'll go right to our callers. We've got Dick with us in Middleton. Hi.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that, well, I think, first of all, voter ID, I haven't been hearing much of it today, but it should not be that hard to get. It's a year in advance, but you said voter fraud. Well, I know, in fact, there were like 70-some young people that were 17 going on 18, thought they could vote or tried to and registered and voted, and I guess some of the clerks didn't catch it. I know they threw out 70-some, and so to say that there's no voter fraud, if you did an audit of every precinct in the state or every state and looked at every name, and you would find that there is some voter fraud. But I know there was over 70-some here in Wisconsin that got thrown out.
Dick, thanks for the call. And I don't know if you'd seen that story, Ari. It was in the primary. There was a belief spread online that if you were going to be 18 by the time of the general election, you could vote in the primary, even though you weren't 18 yet, which I guess is true in some states, not in Wisconsin, though. And so these votes that Dick is talking about got thrown out.
Okay, well, I hadn't heard that. That sounds more like a misunderstanding of the law than an actual attempt to try to defraud the process. It's interesting, you know, there was a recount in Wisconsin, there was a recount in Michigan, there was a recount in Pennsylvania, and the backdrop of this was partly the fact that Donald Trump said that there was going to be massive voter fraud, but when the recounts happened, Trump's own lawyers said in court that the election was not tainted by fraud. So sometimes you have to pay attention to the legal documents themselves, because that's where people are most truthful, and ignore some of the rhetoric. And even Trump's own lawyers said that the election was not tainted by fraud.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to Wayne in Marshfield. Wayne, hi.
Hi. I'm a retired state employee, and I worked with visually impaired people in the northern part of the state. Three of the counties I worked in were on the Michigan border. And there are dozens, I am sure, of voters there that have voted faithfully and then all of a sudden couldn't vote because of transportation problems, limited hours in the DMV offices, and the need for getting a birth certificate, and so on. And because of all these hindrances, they've voted before, but all of a sudden they can't vote. And in a small community, the poll workers know who these people are, and there wouldn't be any question of whether they're legitimate or not. But because of the law, I would guarantee, just in the areas that I worked, dozens of people said, forget it. It's too much problem getting this special voting.
Wayne, thanks for the story. And Ari, in your reporting, did you see stories like that?
I did see stories like that, and that's a really good point. So I wrote about a story, and the Associated Press also wrote about the story of an 85-year-old couple where the wife was undergoing cancer treatments. They had always voted in Plymouth, Wisconsin, but she had an expired driver's license because she no longer drove. That was not accepted for voting, so they said she'd have to go to the closest DMV, which was over 1 hour round trip away. She was someone who was undergoing chemotherapy at the time, and she just didn't have the energy to go there. So she was unable to vote. She was unable to get a voter ID. Her husband was so angry, he decided not to vote either. After the election, this woman unfortunately passed away, and her husband said he's so angry about it, he's not going to vote anymore either, because they always voted together. So these stories to me are quite tragic, because I think there was very, very little risk of an 85-year-old couple committing voter fraud. But you see the kind of burdens that some of these people have to have, that they have to travel a long way to get to the DMV, or they can't make the trip at all. There's one county in Wisconsin where the DMV is only open 5 Wednesdays a year. So it's not always easy for people who don't have this kind of documentation or have documentation that's expired. So for a lot of people, it's not a big deal, but for certain people, particularly people that are older, more marginalized, lower down the socioeconomic ladder, it can be a real burden.
We're talking to Ari Berman from The Nation magazine, looking at voter ID here in Wisconsin and beyond. Back to your calls now. Chris is with us in Maquoningo. Chris, hi.
Hi. I just want to say I find a lot of this ridiculous. You have to have an ID for everything nowadays. You have to have an ID to check out a book, to check out a movie. I mean, how do these people survive without an ID? You know, if it's that big of a deal, why don't we round them up in buses like they do to take them to the polling places? Take them a month ahead and get them driver's licenses or IDs. I just find it ludicrous that in this day and age, all these 200,000 people don't have an ID. I find it ridiculous.
Chris, thanks for the call. Ari, Chris isn't alone. A lot of people wonder, it's hard to go through life without getting some form of ID. Is it really that hard to get them in order to vote?
Well, the problem is not that people don't have IDs, it's that they don't have IDs that are accepted by the state of Wisconsin under a very narrow definition of what qualifies. So I would urge the caller to look at a very in-depth Associated Press story that was done this week. Maybe you can link to it on your website. But they interviewed a Navy vet who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, who recently moved from Illinois to Wisconsin. He had an Illinois driver's license. He had valid ID, the kind of ID that he could use to drive, to cash a check, to rent a book, to buy liquor, all of these things. But that was not accepted in Wisconsin because Wisconsin doesn't accept out-of-state IDs as valid IDs, in the same way that Wisconsin doesn't accept student IDs from a number of universities in the state because they don't comply to the state's rules. And this guy was working 50 hours a week and didn't have time when he first moved to switch over his ID in time. So it's not as simple as people think. Everyone has some form of ID. The problem is not everyone has an in-state driver's license. Not everyone has an in-state ID. And there, that's where you start to run into some issues here.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to Jenny with us in Madison. Jenny, hi.
Hi. I was just calling in about the experience of an out-of-state voter. So I'm a UW student from Arkansas. And in the primary election, I came in with my driver's license and proof of residence like I'd used in 2012 and was told I needed to get a voter ID card made, which I did, and it has a picture of me from when I was 18 as opposed to my driver's license, which is a new picture. When I went to go vote for the state superintendent with my voter ID, I was told I also needed a bus pass, which I don't have because I don't ride the bus, and I was told that if I could pull up an email from a professor, that would work. So voter ID and email from a professor this year.
So, wait, a bus pass and a note from a professor? What would, to back up which part of the ID?
The voter ID, and I told them I had a driver's license and student ID with me, but I was told that a bus pass was more secure.
Jenny, thanks for the call. I have not heard of anything like this, Ari, have you?
I haven't heard about this either, but one of the things you have to realize is that the law is not implemented in a uniform manner, that from polling place to polling place, from county to county, you can get very, very different interpretations of the law, of what's required, of what will be accepted. The very fact that students would have to get a separate ID from their schools just for voting, which had to happen at the University of Wisconsin, which happened at Marquette and all these other places that I visited, is pretty absurd. I mean, for students to have to go through a completely different step to be able to vote, I think was a burden for a lot of them. And sometimes you can overcome this stuff, and sometimes if you're not really that crazy about voting, if you're not really that crazy about the candidates to begin with, you might say, oh, it's just gotten more difficult. Why should I bother in the first place? And I think two things happened with the voter ID law in Wisconsin. Number one, some people just couldn't participate, and other people just decided that it was too much trouble than it was worth. And I think regardless of why people didn't vote, the fact that the voter ID law contributed to that, to me, is very concerning.
Jenny, thanks for the call. Ari, briefly, as we wrap up, it seems like voter ID laws have been spreading through the country pretty quickly. President convening a voter fraud commission now. What are you looking for in trends in the future?
Well, I think President Trump's commission is going to make recommendations for more things like voter ID laws. I think they're going to say that voter fraud is widespread, even though it's not. So I think it's very, very concerning. And I think we should be talking about the problems that people had casting a ballot. I think the kind of conversation that we had on your show is the kind of conversation we should be having in the future, as opposed to talking about voter fraud over and over and over like it's a major problem in American elections when it is not.
Ari, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Rob. I appreciate it.
That's Ari Berman, senior contributing writer for The Nation and author of the book Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. He joined us to talk about his most recent article looking at Wisconsin's voter photo ID law. A new study says it could have suppressed the ballots of as many as 200,000 voters in the state. Some people are skeptical about that number. You can share your thoughts, by the way, over at the Central Time Facebook page. What do you think of voter ID here in Wisconsin? Let us know online.